Innovate Gang Podcast, episode 144. I'm Steve Borch, and I'm on with Tim Purple Rain Elliott.
I'm drumming down here in Lakeville.
Graham, Mr. Jimi Hendrix, thickens.
Ah, happy November, everybody.
And okay, Phil.
This should be good.
Janis Joplin. Wilson. Sorry.
Go ahead. Take a little piece of my heart now, will you?
Oh, good.
That was a good comeback.
It was.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. So how you boys doing?
Well, great, thanks.
Good. So I have to ask, did anybody make the Techni Awards last night? Because I couldn't.
Sorry, I wasn't able to.
Nope.
Okay.
I see the chickens came home to roost, though. The chicken company got the top award or something.
The chicken company.
Chicken company.
The high-tech poultry company you haven't read? We'll have a chicken show notes.
What's high-tech poultry, he asks.
Does something out in Wilmer. It's something about beaks and claws and microwaves. And I don't know. It gets my juices going early in the morning. Chicken, baby.
Wow. Well, there was a lot of tweeting going on. So our pals at Sophia Learning got the Edutech.
Yeah, that was the one that really caught my eye.
Yeah, mine too.
That's such a great group of folks. So I'm glad they're doing well. So
yeah, so we'll post the winners. In mobile, it was Giacom.
Yep.
And just a good group. But the Mojo guys were down there tweeting like mad, and so was it must have been Scott Littman because he was talking about Dan Malin up there. And so it sounds like it was a pretty well attended event. I wish I could have gone, but
it's always a well attended event. There's lots of ties there too. So lots of suits and ties. It's probably,
wear those.
It's probably one of your best dressed tech events here in Minneapolis.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Nice.
But, so, always
the men's warehouse loves it. I hear.
God. Oh man!
It says quality suits like the men's warehouse, right?
You know what I love, yeah, by the way. Whenever I tell my wife, I'm going to a meeting with a company, and I'm not sure what to wear. If I should wear a sport coat with no tie, or I actually have to wear a tie, or you know, et cetera, et cetera. And she just laughs at me. She says, "Now you know what I've gone through all these years."
Oh yeah.
You know, and of course now soon I'll have 47 outfits and 300 pairs of shoes and.
You look right? Best in those pumps, though.
Yeah. Yeah.
Stylish.
Hey, Graham, you wrote a post about our pals at Enstratus. What's going on there?
Yeah, Enstratus, I've known this was coming for a while because I know these guys pretty well. Well, I did back in 2009 in their launch phase, but still good friends with them and been pulling for them for a long time here. And I've been expecting something to break for them in the way of funding. And, you know, they really weren't seeking it. They were kind of bootstrapping the thing and into revenue stage long ago. But they've just announced, actually, it was leaked. A lawyer inadvertently submitted it, the SEC filing. And so it hit the public wires last night. And they've announced a $4.5 million funding, $3.5 million of which was announced in this filing, and they expect to make the full news announcement on as early as Monday of who the other $1 million is coming from. The 3.5 is from our friends at El Dorado Ventures, Menlo Park and Minneapolis, and Jeff Hink is the general partner that will join the board of Enstratus. So very happy to hear about that. And that's the second $3.5 million funding they've done in our town in what, 3 months or so, because of TST Media announcement that came first. It seems like it's not more than 2-3 months ago. That was $3.5 million from El Dorado Ventures, or mostly from El Dorado Ventures. I can't remember the details on that. So this is big news for for the local technology community, that VC money is flowing and there's a local connection there. Nice. with a partner based here. So
well, plus great. Isn't George adding a lot of new people?
Yes, James James Urquhart from Cisco just tweeted out a few days ago that he was leaving Cisco to join in Stratus as VP of product strategy.
That's huge.
And yeah, it is. And this all had something to do with the VC funding. And they are announcing other people as well, although none formally have been announced yet. But it's crazy how the Twitter chat starts happening in the cloud community, the insider community. A lot of these guys I know, but I mean, Twitter was just lit up last night. George is over in Sofia, Bulgaria at some Java conference, and the SEC leaks it, and he's like up at 115 going nuts, you know, trying to control the Twitter stream.
God. Well, especially especially with all the stuff to do over in Bulgaria that he's missing out on.
Yeah. Oh, he doesn't have time for any tourist activities, I'm sure. And he's back soon. Well,
Graham's kind of drifting in and out.
So. Yeah, we're losing you, buddy. Are you there?
If not Saturday, because he's going.
It's like listening to Johnny Mathis.
Yeah,
sorry about that.
We're losing you, Graham. Those doggone packets are colliding in your Wi-Fi.
I hate when those packets are colliding.
I know.
I better go. And he's gone. Why don't you try him back?
Go plug in.
Oh, there he is. Oh, he's on the Wi-Fi.
That works better.
All right.
Wi-Fi is not a good idea.
You go plug in and we'll keep talking. So, the other thing is
speaking of venture, let's talk about the Best Buy thing.
Yes, that's exactly. Yeah. It's...
Do it. Okay.
So the we are so incredibly just like NPR.
It is. Just, it's incredible, isn't it?
We're so professional. The electric motorcycle.
I like the way he's doing it while he's plugged in, so we get to hear all the shuffling. The breathing, and the clicking, and the.
That's right.
So Eric Weifring wrote an article in the Star Tribune about the Best Buy's VC wing, and I found it kind of interesting. And his question was, or his observation was, is this just a vanity project, or are they actually investing in something that's going to ultimately benefit Best Buy as a retail outlet or Best Buy as a whole? So I thought that was an interesting piece.
It was, real focus on electric motorcycles. And you guys know that, you know, I'm a Prius driving, not tree hugging kind of guy.
You're a hypermiler.
But I'm really, really interested in this whole electric adventure. And that was Graham, everyone.
Graham.
Anyway, the reason I'm so interested is, on the one hand, I'm very, very aware of what's going on with oil and everything else, and the increase in mileage. But on the other, my dad has a tiny, tiny, tiny little royalty that he gets from the Bakken Shale oil boom that's going up in North Dakota. It's just nickels and dimes, but those nickels and dimes are increasing every month. And there was just a piece last night that we watched a recording of a new show with Brian Williams on NBC called Rock Center. Mm-hmm. And they'd had a story on the Bakken Shale. And, you know, there's 24 billion barrels of oil that is projected to be able to be pulled out of the Bakken Shale. And right now they've got about 25,000 jobs that they can't fill. And there's no place for people to live up there, and everything else is this gigantic oil boom. And so I look at an investment like this in electric motorcycles, and there's no question that it's, you know, energy is going to continue to go up, but is it going to be more stable than any of us think for a longer period? So instead of running out in 2050, are we going to run out in, you know, 2150? And will an investment like this be a moot point?
Oh, I don't think an investment like this is ever a moot point. I mean, I think that, you know, let's kind of just reset the table here. The concept is that as the piece pointed out, that Best Buy has invested in a company by the name of, what is it again, Brammo, which is an Oregon company developing electric motorcycles. As you know, Polaris has also invested in them as well. So, and it makes sense for Polaris. And it you know, I think Eric pointed out that it didn't necessarily make sense to be invested in electric motorcycles for a an electronics and appliance distributor like Best Buy. So I think that we look at this and we say Best Buy's goal is to try to figure out, you know, what's going to replace disappearing media such as CDs, DVDs, you know, Blu-rays, that sort of thing, because they're going to be basically delivered via the internet. So as we think about that big hole in all the Best Buy stores that may be left by that crater, they're looking at, you know, what do we put in that? You know, whether this is a right investment for Best Buy or not, to your point, Steve, I think anything that not only addresses our oil and fossil fuel needs, I think is good, whether it's a long-term fix or a short-term fix. So I think whether it's a moot point or not, I think it's still very much worth exploring.
It seems like they are just continuing to throw stuff at the wall, though. You talked about what's going to replace all the CDs and DVDs, and you know they've been active in streaming, but Napster is up for sale, I think, or did they sell it?
They sold the subscriptions to it to it's to
Rhapsody, yeah.
And
so
they
seem to be getting out of that business, you know. So I'm not sure if they really know what's going on.
Well, I think that if you look at what they did with Napster, which everyone would agree was a misstep, to be politically correct, I guess. What they've done, if you look at this investment in this electric motorcycle concept, at least that sort of thing is a hard good, and it actually, includes, brings something back to the brick and mortar store. It's a piece of inventory that will occupy space and it will bring people into stores. Whereas the Napster thing, they were clearly out of their element on that. Because that didn't necessarily drive business to the brick and mortar stores, which is really what drives that company. So,
yeah. Right. But if you look at, who they're competing with, folks like Apple, and unless you lived out in the sticks someplace where there's no Apple store nearby, I'm going to go to the Apple store when I need Apple stuff, not a Best Buy.
I don't know. I don't know if they necessarily consider it. Sure. I think they compete with a lot of different, retailers for the fact that they kind of represent more than a few verticals inside the Best Buy store. Yes, they do sell Apple products, but they also sell, refrigerators. So they also sell flat screen TVs. They also sell a lot of things. So, that's what makes them this big box store.
Well, and in their defense, I mean, if you're in Fargo, North Dakota, why drive, 3.5 hours to the Twin Cities to buy a computer that you can buy for the same price at Best Buy?
Exactly.
Well, why not buy it online, though?
Well,
there's just less and less reason to go to a store.
Well, there is, but at the end of the day, too, if you're somewhat undecided on something, I mean, this is the push pull that I always have, is the fact that I can buy everything online and it's easier and easier and easier to return. But at the end of the day, if I want to go in and I want to touch, three tablets because I'm undecided, do I want an iPad or do I want a honeycomb Android tablet of some kind?
I like the honeycomb. I think that's a good look.
Honeycomb, yeah. But if I want to go in and try them, or if I even think, geez, maybe I should just get a netbook, having a store that stocks everything where I can go in and I can try them and I can talk to people and so on. The thing that I have a hard time with is going in and looking at a Jawbone era Bluetooth headset at Best Buy, at Micro Center, at all these bricks and mortar stores, it's $129. And you can buy it from 10 different retailers online for $85. And there's a case where I can't go into Best Buy and try the headphone out for obvious reasons, because, you know, I don't want to stick it in my ear if somebody else has had it in their ear. So that's a case where, geez, you know, not only could I save a ton of money, but there's no advantage to getting it in a brick and mortar store unless I got to have it like right now. And I kind of doubt that. So I don't know. I go back and forth on this stuff.
Emergency. I have had a Bluetooth emergency. So yeah. Again, you're right. Tim makes a valid point about, you know, everything that's purchased online as opposed to in the store. It's a push pull, but I don't necessarily see on site retailing going away. I really don't. I think it might condense. I think the piece of the pie, we look at it in all sorts of industries, the piece of the pie is just getting smaller because of our connectivity.
Yeah.
So it may not be necessarily a really big box store. It just might be a box store.
You know, I still think there's going to be retailers. I just don't know if Best Buy is going to be one of the ones that makes it, just because they really need to figure out, you know, kind of what they're going to become.
Right.
And I think that's what they're doing. That's clearly what they're doing.
But it doesn't seem like they've made any kind of decision, or there's a strategy other than let's try a bunch of stuff and see what works.
Yeah, I have to admit that's true. You know what, though, at the end of the day, the electric motorcycle thing makes sense, because when you think about where Ford has gone with the Microsoft Sync, the Ford Sync, this Chevy Volt that I test drove the other day, I mean, these are basically smart devices that are electric. And the more and more I think about it, the more I think the electric motorcycle, in a lot of ways, or scooter, makes a lot of sense, because it is in their sweet spot for pricing. You know, it's under $3,000-ish in most cases, and it's electric, and you know, makes a lot of sense in some ways. So we'll see. We'll see what happens.
Yeah, switching gears a little bit. I know we're going to talk to Lisa Foote here in a minute, and that means mobile. So there's a few other mobile things that happened this week.
Yeah.
Did you see that this GOMO portal that Google announced?
Sure did.
Yeah, I did. And why don't you tell us what it is?
It's just a way for small businesses to mobilize their web content. So, you know, it's just another way to make it easy for people to come up with high quality mobile websites.
So here's what I thought was weird. What I thought was weird was the fact that I went there and I actually have a mobile plugin on one of my sites, and I put that in and it didn't pull up the mobile site, pulled up the regular site. Mm-hmm. So I thought that was interesting. So Graham, I didn't notice that you dropped off.
Yeah, I'm back on now.
Okay.
I'm wired.
We missed you, buddy.
Oh, yeah. I missed you guys, too.
It's a lot clearer. We're talking about GOMO, that Google mobile site thing.
And it wasn't working for you, huh?
Well, it didn't pull up the... it was supposed to browser sense. It didn't pull up the WP Touch, the WordPress Touch interface. So I thought that was kind of interesting, because if you go to Minovate.com with your Android phone or your iPhone,
we're
or
iOS mobilized.
Device, yeah. we're mobilized. But if you pull it up in Ready to GOMO, it pulled up the normal interface. Hmm. So I thought that was kind of interesting.
Sounds like another Google screw up.
Now
there's a long list going here. Well, have you guys been talking about that while I was dropped out, or?
Well, no. I think this is just sort of one more step in Google's strategy to work with local businesses and try to figure out ways to get more businesses online. I mean, if you look at some 60% of businesses in America that don't have a website, this clearly is a step for them. And there's no doubt that mobile is where is the future. And there are so many people, you know, think about those 60% of businesses that don't have a website, small and medium businesses that don't have a website. If they don't have a website, they obviously don't have any concept of what it looks like on a mobile phone.
Yeah.
So,
and they're just not in the game.
Right. Right. So, I mean, this is Google's play to do that. And I think that you're seeing Google localize and localize and localize more and more. And I think it will only benefit them in the long run to do that. And well, But, you know, and to say, you know, from another standpoint, there are also other companies out there doing it. I'm working with Dex One, and Dex One has a big dedication to local search. And along with their suite of products is also websites, mobilized websites and that sort of thing. So Google's not alone in the space.
Mm-hmm. Well, yep. Here's the other thing that I think is interesting is, you know, I don't know who put this in the show notes, the Google Reader enhancements. But when I remember doing a post when Google rolled out Google Sites on my own site about how my grandma could design better than Google, because it was just honest to God, I looked at sites and was like, well, this is great if it was 1998,
right?
But it was just the most god awful design capability, and I will still say that their themes and everything else for iGoogle and everything else are sort of embarrassing.
They're weak.
But the Google Reader enhancements, I don't even use the Google interface anymore. I use feed readers. So to me, them taking sharing stuff out and whatever doesn't even matter to me. But then they released the Gmail for iOS.
And I downloaded it. Sort of reeled it back in.
Well, they did, because it had an error message that popped up when you launched the app.
Wasn't that crazy?
It was nuts. And also... The app doesn't do anything. I mean,
it's basically the web interface, isn't it? The mobile web interface?
No, it's not actually. It's well, you'll have to see it. I'll put a link in the show notes, but
we'll see it.
Here's the interesting thing about it is that it didn't do anything over and above the built-in mail app in iOS, and so I can't log in. I can't send email from the 8 different email addresses that I have combined management inside Gmail, you know, so I couldn't pull up multiple signatures. You can't really manage anything. You can't do any filter stuff, you know, and so on. So it's really, really basic. And I thought, God, these guys, I mean, I really believed at one point that Google would be the infrastructure in the back end and Apple would be the interface, the front end, for all of these internet-based services that we're all going to use, and it was like the perfect marriage, and unfortunately, like 50% of them, they end in divorce, so didn't work out too well.
Yeah. So, what do you guys think of who's using the new reader?
I am, and
I am too.
It's not an improvement. I mean, from a look and feel perspective, it's nice that it looks like the other apps,
right,
which is an improvement. But from a performance standpoint, it's slower, and they've taken out. I mean, I use the sharing differently than most people. Probably, I used it to create a curated RSS feed that then could be republished by other apps, and that's gone now.
Oh, I didn't know that. Okay.
So what I've done as a workaround is one of the things that they built in is sending to various services. So I sent to Delicious and used the Delicious feed as that proxy, but it's an extra step now. Before, you just click share and you knew that it was going to show up on that RSS feed at some point. Now you have to click send to Delicious and then tag it in Delicious, but you know.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure if this is a step in the right direction or not.
Well, I mean, the thing that we also need to talk about is the Gmail change was all, you know, that's also changed as well.
I had a client yesterday, and I look after their Google Apps for Business, and she called me last night in a panic, saying, "I switched to the new Gmail and I hate it. How do I go back?" Yeah. And luckily, there is a way you can go back.
Sure, right? You can go back for a brief period of time.
Yeah, it's just temporarily. It doesn't say how temporary it's going to be, so who knows?
Yeah, well, try new things. Once again, throw it against the wall, see if it sticks. Put it on the front porch, see if the cat licks it up. You know, that sort of stuff.
Absolutely.
They've got to improve the service, but these changes don't seem to me like improvements.
Hey, listen, let's talk a little bit of mobile. And when we talk about mobile on a, you know, sort of an extended basis, we like to bring Lisa Foote on board. Lisa Foote, who is the CEO of Mixmobi, founder and CEO of Mixmobi, and also sort of our local mobile goddess, is standing by. Why don't we bring her in and see what's happening in the world of mobile there, Mr. Steve?
That sounds great. That sounds great.
Oh, she's ringing.
Ringy dingy. One
ringy dingy.
Oh, stop. You guys just so dated yourselves.
This is Lisa.
Lisa, how are you?
Hi.
Hi, guys.
Good morning. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome to the stage Lisa Foote.
Yay, all right.
So did you make it through the commute okay this morning, Lisa?
I did. We're in one piece.
Yay! So let's talk mobile. You know, we always like to bring you on board when we want to find out what's happening in the world of mobile. What's happening in the world of mobile? He asks inquisitively.
Well, what we're seeing a lot more chatter about is HTML5 and the opportunities that brings to developers and everyone. Sometimes folks aren't completely understanding the HTML standards, and when they hear that HTML5 is quote-unquote not complete, they think it's either not usable or not ready for prime time, whereas in fact lots of things are being done in HTML5 even as it continues to evolve. So that's probably one of the biggest topics that I hear a lot about right now.
If you were to just in a nutshell say, what's the difference between HTML and HTML5? What would that brief elevator explanation sound like?
Yep, I think the biggest difference is actually between the most previous version of HTML, which is that HTML5 is bringing on board many, many capabilities, and I'll give you a really good example that make developing in HTML5 quite competitive with using any of the software development kits, iOS, Android, RIM, and one really good example of that is geolocation. So you can actually do a feature like, would you be okay with sharing your geolocation with us via HTML5 with no need for a downloaded app, again, or for an iOS or an Android app? So that's a really good example of how powerful HTML5 has become.
So it makes your coding a little more lightweight, a little less bulky for your ultimate end user device. Is that what you're trying to say?
Absolutely. It makes it less bulky and from a business's point of view, perhaps more significantly, eliminates the need to develop separate applications for iOS, for RIM, and for Android.
Gotcha. So what else is going? Speaking of RIM, how are things going for RIM?
Oh, poor RIM, poor BlackBerry, once the king of the hill, not so much anymore. I believe the last quarterly sales figures I saw, if I'm remembering correctly, they had 9% of smartphone sales in the quarter ending September.
Worldwide.
And that's, oh man is right, Steve. Lo, how the mighty have fallen. Playbook is widely being viewed as okay, but really not, you know, even close to an iPad competitor, and there really aren't any serious iPad competitors yet. We'll see what Kindle Fire brings, but BlackBerry seems to be in pretty sad shape. I actually had some exposure to some of their new devices this week. I got to handle some of their newer smartphones, and while they're nice, they don't really address either Apple's lock on what I call the luxury mobile market, that very high-end market, or Google's ability to just, you know, put Android on everything by giving it away. So they're sort of, I think, left without much of a strategy at this point.
Yeah, it's just speaking of too little, too late. What do you think of Windows 7 and the new Nokia devices?
I think that both Nokia and Nokia/Windows, right, to get together, and RIM have got an awfully steep hill to climb right now. Nokia has had tremendous value destruction. Everything I've read about, and unlike the new BlackBerry devices, Tim, I have not yet handled a new Windows phone, a new Mango device. Everything I've read about it says that it's really good. I mean, it's really a competitor and delightful to use. You just, you know, the one headline I keep reading is, you know, too little, too late, ? So some of this will depend on distribution. Nokia's been very, very strong outside the U.S. for a long time. So if they can get their, their network operators to sell the devices, and if they can get, you know, it's just going to take them, don't you think, a good 6 to 12 months to get traction with that. So you're kind of looking into calendar 2013, maybe.
Well, don't you think there is an opportunity in the outside the consumer market, in the enterprise market, for someone like a Windows to, or for that matter, RIM to continue to maintain their position there?
You know, what's happened there is, and I read an article about this just last month, IT departments increasingly are giving up their stranglehold on what devices they'll support. They have figured out how to support, you know, first of all, they were forced to figure out how to support iPhone, obviously, a couple of years ago. Now they're supporting Android. And as they're doing that, when you look at it from the enterprise's point of view, if your knowledge workers are, in fact, if anything, fighting to purchase and bring their own devices into work, what's cheaper, supporting a variety of devices or continuing to buy their hardware for them? I'm thinking that's choice A. So I think we're going to see more and more and more bring your device to work, you know, acceptance.
Really? And companies will just simply have to support it.
Yeah, and they are. More and more cheerfully they are. I just read a profile recently of Kraft. They interviewed their, not their CIO, but their, you know, their guy who does all their IT infrastructure. And he said, yeah, we're over it. You know what I mean? We'll support support your BlackBerry, we'll support your whatever. And as I said, what's cheaper? I think it's far cheaper to say, hey, great, you know, you just bought a new, you know, Sensation, or you just bought a new Windows phone, whatever.
I'm not sure that all the IT departments are happily doing that, but yeah. I think it's one of those things that they have to do.
I was really surprised by the article, Phil. I had the same assessment you did, and apparently they've all kind of gone, okay, or not all, but many, many of them have kind of said, all right, we can do that. We can figure that out.
It's security for them in a declining role for IT in the enterprise, you know?
Do you think IT in the enterprise is a declining role, really?
Oh, absolutely.
Because of the cloud.
Yeah, because of the cloud, we talk about...
But you still have to connect to it, you know? So I think that's...
Well, the business units have more and more, you know, to say about what they're going to do, and they do it in the cloud, and corporate IT is a declining function as far as numbers.
I agree with everything Graham just said, and I would add, I think it's a shifting function.
Yes.
I think it's a real different function than what we might have been used to as recently. Just 3 years ago.
You're saying a shifting function, not a shitty function. It's a shifting function.
No, it's both.
Shifting. Shifting.
That's because we would not never defecating. Swear on the podcast.
Not defecating, Phil.
Oh, okay.
But what you were talking about, supporting, you know, the workers' devices that they're bringing from home, that's a major shift in the function, I think. That's one of them.
Absolutely. Yep. And I 100% agree with Graham. I think the cloud and the virtualization, the abstraction of so much. I mean, when we think about the evolution, and I just this morning tweeted a great article from The Guardian by a guy whose Twitter handle is MBRIT, MBRIT. And it was just so well written. And he talked about the evolution of, you know, computers on mainframes, computers on software, client servers, some of it shifting to the PC, and how all of this simply, you know, just continues to shift. His primary topic was when might HTML5 replace the native apps. But really, he was talking a lot more about what Graham just mentioned, this entire huge shift to the cloud and to abstraction.
Yeah, the cloud guys sort of irreverently refer to corporate IT as the Department of No. That it's going away, you know, it's true. I mean, cloud is changing things.
But, you know, in their defense, I remember when I was at Lawson, I walked into the marketing area, and one of the marketing guys had brought in his own Wi-Fi router and plugged it into an Ethernet cable. So they could have wireless in the department, and, you know, it wasn't secured, nothing. And, you know, so they deal with that kind of stuff all the time. People going rogue on them, you know, and so forth. But,
help desk, you know, it's still a big thing, but I read where 60% of help desk calls are for lost passwords, you know, so I guess that's never going to go away, you know?
So Lisa, I'm curious because I'm certain you're looking at this pretty closely and tracking it. And one of the big announcements was about Apple putting in app purchases, or not in-app purchases, but purchases in-store with the app where you walk in, you pick up an accessory, you scan it, you buy it, you walk out. And, you know, as kind of a first step toward near-field communications potentially, what are you seeing happening with e-commerce and mobile?
Yep. I actually think we're going to end up even leapfrogging that. So if you look, and I apologize, I'm blanking on the name, and I was just reading an article about it this morning, but the guys who do the little cube, the little
Square.
Cube,
Square, yeah.
Square.
Yep.
Square has a new initiative, and I apologize, it's called Card, you'll find it, but basically what it is it's geofencing. You walk into your bakery, and you the bakery that Steve just walked in. You walk up to the clerk and she says, what's your name? And you say, Steve Borsch. And she hands you your cupcake. I'm taking this example right from the article, which was in Slate. And you guys will be able to find it right quick. It was just this week and post it to the site. And then she puts it on your tab and you walk out.
Yeah, the deal
that's
is
you, huge.
You don't even have to take your phone out of your pocket. So, you know,
exactly.
You got your laptop in one hand, your cup of coffee in the other, and you just say, okay, hit me.
The only problem with that example is that at least two or three cupcakes.
It's cupcakes, yes.
Yeah. Okay, but you know, can I tell you what my biggest concern is? So if I buy my dad some undergarments in Walgreens, the next time I walk into my Walgreens, is the pharmacist going to say, yeah, Steve, do you need any more Depends?
Yeah.
No, seriously.
Think about it. And seriously, think about the upsell potential. Think about the consultative selling potential of you walking into Nordstrom and them having your entire family, if you're all in one, say, private label Nordstrom credit card. Think of the upsell potential, think of the intimacy, the engagement of that sales clerk on her iPad seeing, you know, that you bought resort wear.
Yeah.
You know, oh, you're going to take a vacation this winter, you know, Mr. Wilson, and blah, blah, blah. I mean, I think that I actually believe, and the geofencing that's required for that is a relatively modest investment compared to I've heard some major retailers talk about putting RFID devices, and we all remember Walmart's partial victory in trying to force all of their suppliers a couple of years ago to put RFID in every single item.
Exactly. Yep.
It is far, far easier to do something like this initiative from Square than for the consumer. And quite frankly, I'm not impressed by Google Wallet Alpha or by ISIS. ISIS, it's November. They are way, way, every project slips, right? But ISIS is so far behind its initial 2011 beta pilot schedule. You know, they're just running into tons of issues. The biggest issue for that, from my point of view, is for the smaller merchants, the cost of those readers in the store. It's just a lot. And then the battle with the banks, et cetera. I think all this is going to be leapfrog. So you've got my prediction on the record here.
Okay. All right. Well, in a lot of ways, it's exciting. And in a lot of ways, it's, you know, continuing to be disconcerting about, how much is done. And will people be able to hijack your phone?
Yep.
And
because
I don't know if you ever saw this, but there was a when RFID, for those that don't know, radio frequency identification, RFID is the acronym, was supposed to have a 1 meter range.
Yep.
So it was supposed to be very, very close. You'd have to be very close to the object in order for the phone to pick up the RFID. And these guys at the Black Hat conference in Las Vegas, this is about 3 years ago, had a parabolic dish they hooked up. And they were able to go, they showed actually in a video that they could pick up RFID from 1 mile. Now that's without, you know, they were on a beach, they were on a pier, they were pointing at a guy on a beach. So there was nothing in between, right? But still, the point was, is that it would be relatively trivial to create RFID scanners that would pick this stuff up. So, you know, I think about this same thing. Are there going to be faux transactions that are done as people walk by? And what kind of controls will be in place?
Yep. I really wish I could remember so I could attribute this comment, but unfortunately I cannot. But someone within the last year I read, and it really stuck in my mind because I formerly had concerns like that. Not that I don't have concerns like that. The quote was something to the effect, every time people bet on the American public caring deeply about the personal privacy of their personal data, the company loses. People are shockingly casual about sharing credentials, about sharing their email address. I think you should still ask. I think that's a good hygiene, but really people are just not that wigged out about this stuff. And I think just like today your wallet can get stolen, I think in the future that'll happen electronically. I totally share your concern, Steve, and I just don't think it's going to stop this.
This, I mean, this sort of discussion about RFID and near field communication, this is all stuff that really makes the black helicopter people really scared. So, there's extra ammo being buried as we speak.
Well, I have my tinfoil hat on as we speak as well. So,
anything else going on, Lisa? Tell us what's anything locally in the world.
It's not super related to mobile, but Groupon is doing its IPO today. Yeah. I suspect it is going to be the usual fleecing of the sheep out of the gate, you know, a double or triple in a day or two, and then it'll fall way back in the next month. I think their economic model, I don't think they even have an economic model quite right.
Yeah, but they raised $700 million.
Yep. No doubt. All power to them.
And no idea what to do with it.
yeah. So that'll be interesting to see how that all falls out. It'll be very fascinating to me globally to see how fourth quarter is always big for mobile sales as it is for everything else. It will be very interesting to me to see if Comscore and Nielsen, they both independently predicted that the U.S. would get to 50% smartphone penetration by the end of the year. The last I looked, we were at 40% smartphone penetration in the U.S., and given holiday giving, I could easily see us being, if not at 50, very close to 50%. So I did a presentation to the local Harvard Club group.
Harvard Club.
They were lovely people. They really were. They were
well,
very nice.
Buffy.
And I showed them a recent Economist piece showing graphs for all the major economies of the world: Japan, South Korea, the U.S., Russia, each European area, and all of them either have just passed, are just passing, or about to pass 50% smartphone penetration. Also, interestingly, in the U.S., we've now passed 50% of all mobile devices being sold are smartphones. So, again, we're approaching 50% ownership, and today 50% of all devices sold will be smartphones, so you can see we're at the tipping point now.
Well, and
so
what
that's
I was
very exciting. Very exciting.
Sorry to interrupt. Mary Meeker, when she did her State of the Internet report, the thing that blew me away was there's probably 10 slides that blew me away, but one of them in particular was made in USA smartphone operating systems are now 64% share, up from 5% 5 years ago. So it's iOS, Android, and Windows Mobile.
Yeah. We just basically wiped Nokia off the playing field, right?
Yeah.
That's what happened there. Absolutely. Yeah.
So I just read an article the other day about what's the right age for a kid to have a smartphone? What are your thoughts there, mobile goddess?
I think it's becoming pretty much the same answer as it is for what's the right age for that child to have a mobile phone. I do think that we're going to see the continued growth of safety things for children for smartphones. Obviously, a non-smartphone, even if it can get to the internet, is a little bit less scary to give your child. But I think that age is going to continue to decline. The last step I saw on actuals, which isn't to say advice, but what people are really doing, is I believe it was like 12 and decreasing pretty steadily. A friend of mine, just very brief anecdote, told me a story about his 14-month-old. He's dropping his 14-month-old off at his mom's. And a younger sibling than he had left her iPod on a table in the foyer, and his 14-month-old squirmed out of grandma's arms to run over, reach up, grab her iPod, and turn it on and start playing with it.
Wow.
So I just, you know what I mean? I just think that it's going to become very, very common, and I think it'll be as soon as the child can reliably not lose it or break it, I think that that's when kids are going to start getting them. I think they're going to be child-proofed so that they can't access things you don't want them accessing on the internet. They'll have usage limitations far more strict than adults. But I think they're going to be the common thing for kids to have, yeah.
Well, fun fact to know and tell, a woman named Sally Knabley, who's an Eden Prairie, she was a teacher, and now she's leading a group of seven who teach teachers about technology and how to leverage it best throughout the district. And she and I got together for coffee about a year and a half ago and had this long conversation. And one of the things that just blew her away was the fact that she says, here these kids are walking in with these devices and we make them shut them off. And if they don't shut them off, we take them away. Rather than, as long as you've got it, let's use it. And for those of you that don't have it, here's an iPod Touch or something. And so maybe like the corporate IT people we were talking about earlier, maybe educators will finally get around to leveraging all these things that kids are walking in with.
Mm-hmm. I think that's going to happen, absolutely.
I agree. I mean, here in Lakeville, I had a long conversation with our new superintendent of schools, and you know, we're in that zone of we raise money or try to divert money to building up computer labs, and she says, you know, computer labs are very passe. I mean, we can get more technology in kids' hands faster by buying them, you know, buying iPads or smartphones or some sort of handheld device rather than bringing them all into one room and working. So
doesn't this bring us all the way around to Graham's point about the cloud? Because the teacher can put content out there. She can put homework assignments out there on the cloud. Kids can download them, consume them, work on them right on the cloud. So, yeah, the computer lab passe, I'll say, yeah.
Yep. Edutech is a strong space, including here in Minnesota. There's a lot of things going on, including KidBlog, which now has more than a million students using its platform.
Wow.
Little cottage business that started up a couple years ago. I mean, it's amazing the Edutech things going on right here in Minnesota.
Yep. Yep. Well, Lisa, thanks very much for joining us. As always, kind of bringing us up to speed and what's happening in mobile. We'll check back with you every once in a while. Go from there. Best of luck. Are things going well with MixMobi?
Oh, you're so sweet to ask. We are just this week adding a new, exciting new feature called Time Boxing. And with Time Boxing, clients are going to be able to say a QR code or an item posted to Facebook should display content A from, you know, 4 a.m. to 8 a.m., content B from 8 a.m. to 10 a.m. It's going to be very, very exciting. You know, think about day parts for restaurants. Think about contests. And we have actually a major retailer who's going to use the, I don't think I'm at liberty to announce it yet, because they haven't announced it yet, but they're going to use Time Boxing for a very exciting Black Friday promotion. It's going to be very, very fun, where consumers will get a different content piece of their Black Friday puzzle depending on what hour they're scanning. It's so very, very exciting. And we're also starting to do geolocation. So you can, with the consumer's permission, return content that's appropriate for their location.
So what part of that Black Friday thing are you not allowed to announce?
I can't, unfortunately.
No, I mean, you pretty much talked about it, so I'm just kind of curious, what part couldn't you announce?
I can't name the client, and I don't want to steal their thunder.
We could guess.
Don't guess, because then I'll just have to say I can neither confirm nor deny. But it's a very fun promotion, and again, we just think Time Boxing is kind of that next level of sophistication for. Whether you're talking about QR codes, social, or NFC, you know what I mean? For any of those to be able to develop or deliver.
We call that day parting in broadcast. So it's
Time
boxing is a very hip tool. So
Time boxing is, that's that's the cool kid's name that our CTO gave it. Time boxing has a certain meaning in agile development as well.
I thought it had something to do with Real Steel, that movie in theaters with the boxing.
It sounds a little sci-fi, doesn't it? Time boxing.
Yeah, it does.
Lisa, thanks very much. I'm glad things are going
Thanks,
well.
Guys.
Take care.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
So Lisa Foote from Mixmobi and our mobile goddess. How's that? That's not sexist, is it, to say that sort of thing?
No. Well, you got to watch out these days, you know. Whatever you say to women could be construed.
Yeah, you got to be
careful.
Wrong
way.
Mobile expert. So there we go. We'll.
The advice is don't even talk to them in the workplace.
Oh, would you stop?
Or you'll be accused.
Like a true man of the last century.
I'm glad yeah. I'm not in the workplace.
Oh, man.
Okay.
About that.
Well, listen, what's coming up in the next week, guys? Or a couple of weeks. We've got a full slate of events, as a matter of fact.
Well, today that is the start of that front-end masters workshop.
Which is a whole series.
And that this Hacks and Hackers Twin Cities sounds really fascinating.
It is. It's very fascinating. And, you know, I would encourage you to come check it out.
That's on the 9th.
That's on the 9th. Yeah.
At the U.
Yep. And then one of the premier business-oriented Mac-related, iOS-related software company is Jamf, downtown Minneapolis. And I will tell you that if you haven't seen their product, if you have to manage a bunch of iPhones or iPads or Macs, there frankly is no other solution out there. They are just they are killing it.
Yeah, they are.
And now that more and more companies are allowing people to take whatever laptop they want, and guess what? More and more people are saying, "Yeah, I'd like to have that MacBook Air." And so there's more and more demand for IT to support it and to do upgrades and so forth. So these guys are, they're just crushing it.
Yeah, they are. And the fact that they're having their user conference at the Guthrie Theater tells you how many people might be showing up. I mean, it's
so is that going to be in the round or on the proscenium stage?
They didn't say.
The Code Slingers Challenge is coming up on the 12th of November at Fusion Room, right? So that's if you're into coding, that's a good product camp set for the 12th of November as well at St. Thomas.
Yes.
Excellent.
The same day as the Wisconsin Gopher game at TCF Bank Stadium. So I'm going to be shuttling between the two.
And the one event that's not on the 12th, that would be the Mobile Twin Cities gathering November 15th, held at the Refactor Office. Come out and join us for that. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah,
and it's getting bigger and better. And again, it's not just for coders. It's for anybody who's interested in mobile and mobile business. So come on out.
Cool. So, Graham, are you going to Denver to defrag next week?
Oh, yeah, big time. And I helped recruit a bunch of startups to go with some free passes. And Zingstring, Assist Me, TST Media, Kid Blog, and hopefully Fan Chatter, Marty Weatherall, are going to make it out there, although Marty's questionable. But and Instratus is one of many sponsors at that event. It's going to be a gathering of the thought leaders like no other. It's always just fantastic. This is the fifth year in a row that I'll be going since inception, and it continues to draw great folks. Robert Stevens is one of the keynoters.
Oh, excellent.
And maybe you can ask him about those electric cars or electric
motorcycles.
Sure, ask him about the electric motorcycles. What's the deal with that, Robert?
It's
going to be zipping around the campus there at Best Buy.
One thing I heard, is speaking of Robert, is that Gary Kohling's group is now reporting up through him, which I thought was interesting. I didn't know.
Gary Kohling is, that's been in place for quite some time. He's actually been working for, Gary's been reporting to Robert for quite some time. So.
Yeah, but Robert told me he wasn't going to be building a kingdom over there, but it sounds like he does.
Sounds like he is.
I don't, trying to figure out the org chart over there is something I gave up a long time ago. But
Very fluid.
Oh my God, yeah.
So... anyway, anything else for the good of the order, gents?
We've done it.
Just that don't forget to set your clocks back.
Good. Good advice, Steve. Thanks very much.
You're so welcome.
Tomorrow.
Right? Yeah, I know.
But tomorrow night. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or you could do it now and beat the rush.
Yeah.
You could. You could.
So
probably not a great
idea. Remember to fall back, and we'll see you next week on the Minute Maid Gang podcast.
See you later, boys.
Thanks.
You betcha.